afternoon. Today is Tuesday, January the 28th, 28th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from still sunny?
Sunny Fortuna.
Sunny Fortuna, Regan Candelaria. Hey, how you doing, guy?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, you know, you showed up, so I kind of...
We actually had some raindrops there today.
And did you? Good.
Night, so that's good, nice. Good. I know everybody's looking forward to that.
Enough to knock the dust off the city vehicles and the fences and the park equipment?
I don't know if it was really that
I know.
Much.
It was like I was looking forward to rain and nothing. It's like, just a disappointment.
Yeah, there'll be more.
Yeah, I hope. This afternoon, we'll talk about some of the different challenges that it takes to be a city manager, other than tough skin and fleet of foot.
We definitely have to have tough skin.
Yeah. So we'll talk about some of the challenges that are out there when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Ogden Nash. Sometime between 1902 and 1971 said, quote, "Middle age is when you've met so many people that every new person you meet reminds you of someone else."
Yeah. That's very true.
That's frightening.
Yeah. Now I think I'm experiencing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, middle age has all kinds of interesting things, benefits as well as challenges associated with it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm starting to realize that I'm there, a slow learner, obviously. Yeah. I'm even beating you to your punch, huh?
Just sitting here thinking, oh, God, whatever I have is going to be related to city government.
No. This was three folks in the radio industry that we knew all died in the last 10 days.
Oh, God, sorry.
And some of them were national guys. One guy who's... we met as a buddy 35 years ago. He's a CBS affiliate in Arizona. And you know, just how things change. And if you do it long enough and you know enough people, things start to change.
Yeah.
I just don't like change. I'm not a big fan of change.
Yeah, the part that I was thinking about from our perspective is what is middle age anymore? And now it's so much later. And we're dealing with this from our level because of our retirement benefits. And they're readjusting, saying, well, people are living longer now. So, you know, we're having to deal with these additional costs. So.
Can a city or a jurisdiction change retirement age? Like, if city council said yes, obviously following staff recommendations, so everybody was kumbaya about it. Mm-hmm. Could you kick it from 65 to 75?
We certainly could, and we have, and they call them tiers. A lot of cities have them now. They have certain tiers of retirement formulas, and we actually have three tiers. I always kind of act like I'm crying because they are coming out of my ears. It's so hard to deal with, but we do have three different tiers of retirement formulas in Fortuna.
Well, you know, you think of most folks who are in their early 70s or late 60s, not only do they have more knowledge and experience, so their time on task is so much more efficient because they know what they're doing and they know how to do it, but they're still physically capable of doing it also. So I don't, this concept of just kind of checking out at a magical age just seems like, you know, unless you weren't doing what you like to do, wouldn't seem like a plus. It would seem more like a punishment almost.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, you know, but it's hard to determine who's more efficient at their job. Like you talked about, well, I guess before we started with having current knowledge of new programs and current language, you know, what's the best way to do things now? Things do get more efficient and technology helps a lot. And sometimes people that have been in a process for a long time doing it the same old way, you know, sometimes there's newer ways that they don't necessarily learn or aren't interested in learning.
But when you're digging up pipes in the street and the guy that's there is the guy that put it in, 35 years ago.
That kind of institutional knowledge is very valuable.
Yeah.
Where was that pipe and what did we do to put it in? And what were our issues when we put it in that we need to make sure we're not messing up as we dig it up, right?
Yeah. So I just, and I think somehow it's disingenuous to say, oh, well, consulting. What does that mean? You can't hire the replacement? What do you mean? No, I mean, either they're with you or they're not. But I would think that so many businesses and cities and jurisdictions lose so much when one of those 40-year employees does leave. Mm-hmm. And they are gone, and you don't have that reference. Does Fortuna do anything to either oral or video or some fashion try to keep some of that institutional knowledge?
We do. It's you know, succession planning is something that's very important, and you know, it's one of the things that we're always working on. And from our human resources side and the training we get, you know, is building a good team and building a good team that's sharing their knowledge and actually training and you know raising the value of the people that work for them and with them. So that's very important.
Will you ask for notes, or will you just kind of sit down and talk? I some of these video cameras that are now, I mean, you probably put it on somebody's hat or on their shoulder and just have them walk up and down town and talk about, you know, they're walking from M Street to N Street on 8th, bum, 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 and here's what happened here and here's what's going on that, and just kind of have like a strolling history. I don't know how you cross-reference it so you could find it real quickly, but I would think things like that would be just invaluable.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never thought of that concept, and you know, it would be nice to have. And when you have that personal nature of a relationship to be able to ask those questions and find out that history, it's generally a little more effective than like what we do have is our files. You know, we have the as-built documents for that pipe that was in the ground that the engineer did and that the inspector checked off on, and there's a note in that file someplace buried in Public Works that, you know, we have a pretty good filing system, but, you know, it's an effort to go back and find that from 1980, from 1970. You know, what were we doing when we undergrounded those pipes? So that's really what's there, is something in on paper or, you know, hopefully digitally in a computer someplace that's been scanned in that you can find and identify.
Easily retrievable. Yeah, I heard that one in there.
That's where we'd like to be.
Yeah, I got the storage part down. It's that retrieving part that I haven't mastered yet. Mm. And, you know, somehow I always forget how I'm titling things. Hmm. So to do a search really doesn't provide me any insight or assistance.
Yes, it's, you know, I struggle with that myself because there's so many different avenues to get to a project and so many different people involved. You know, there's different ways to file things. So.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria. Regan, what are some of the challenges that are out there for city managers? You've been in the saddle now long enough, so the newness is probably starting to wear off a little bit. You know who most of the players are. So it's normal instead of fired with passion, mm-hmm, kind of stuff. So for a small town, and we certainly all qualify around here, what are some of the individual challenges or the professional challenges that someone sitting in the big boy chair runs into?
Well, that's a... you're asking a very broad question because in my chair, there's a challenge every day. There's almost something new every day. And there's, you know, five elected officials that, that we try and make sure that we're working correctly for and we're implementing the policy that they've requested. And so there's something every day. And so, you know, challenges, that's the norm. You know, I'm not really sure how else to respond to that other than to try and come up with one for you that maybe is a challenge that I'm trying to address for the next year. You know, obviously our budget every year is a challenge. I mean, it's always a chore because costs rise, you know, from our perspective every year in terms of salaries and benefits and, you know, retirement benefits and then health benefits, all of that. And then just the cost of, you know, doing business. You know, we're in trucks and we're driving around all day and we're filling potholes and we're buying concrete and we're buying asphalt and all that stuff, you know, costs more and more each year. Well, you know, we still have the same amount or more of potholes that continue to be created. So, you know, that's always a challenge. But I guess the way I try to think of it is, what is my challenge for the next year or 2 years? And that's the way I try to think. So we put together a list, actually, that I shared with the Chamber of Commerce a couple weeks ago at their breakfast meeting. Here's what I want to be working on for the next couple years. You know, we're going to hopefully have a handle on the general, you know, services that we provide. But, you know, to make those better or to do new things, here's what we're trying to address. So,
how complicated would it be if there was inflation? If there was a normal economy and inflation existed, even if it was only, let's say, 1.5%. Not a lot, not enough, not like some years, but certainly something that would be there. How difficult would something like that compound the day-to-day activities?
Well, it's something that you would have to try and address every year if you knew what that percentage was, like we do with our healthcare costs that we know our reps are telling us it's going to be 13% this year, which I just heard last Thursday, which, you know, is a tough number. Anything in double digits, it's going to be more difficult. But you have to start looking ahead at what kind of services are you going to be able to provide for that 13% less, you know, money that you have on hand. So you have to think about cutting programming. You have to think about cutting staffing. You have to think about, you know, if there's any room for efficiency left. Small cities like, you know, the majority of us here in this county, we've cut a lot of that. You know, we're already down to the barest minimum of staff members, and, you know, it's hard to assign new projects and new programs to them when they're overtaxed already.
Is it tough to maintain enthusiasm?
That, yes, employee morale is always a challenge. You want to ask where one of the challenges is, you know, because they have to do more with less. You know, that's through my years of government, you know, local government management, you know, for a long time there, it was, we're going to do more with less, you know, and that was the mantra of a lot of city managers and a lot of local organizations. And it's gotten so bad over the last 5 years. I'm hearing a lot of guys saying now their mantra is, we're going to do less with less. You know, the reality that there just isn't as much revenue, there isn't as much coming in. You know, the economy's been bad for a while, and those costs continue to rise. And those two things, you know, are not jiving. And so the realization is that, yes, we have to do less, and we have to do it with less people and with less resources.
Now, the state budget seemed like it was, in reading the trades,
encouraging,
halfway acceptable.
Yeah, I use the word encouraging because to me it was like, oh, there's some positives coming out of that, which, you know, trickles down to us in the city level, you know, through the counties. Is, you know, it's not as bleak as what it's been the last few years.
But on the other hand, the state in the past has had balanced budgets, and they just hammer the cities and the county by shifting program responsibilities. So I don't trust them.
You probably are not the only one with that feeling.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, majority opinion inside this studio, huh? So what does it translate? What is this budget that Governor Brown is so excited about that he's championing? And boy, you know, Evans and Chesbro are all excited about. What does it mean for the small little towns in this part of the district? Is this good news? Is this okay news? Is this, well, it could be worse news?
I'll go back to the word encouraging. It's the fact that I'm not sitting here going, oh God, they're going to be doing this to us and it's going to affect that. It's more when I look at their budget, it's like, okay, they at least are, you know, putting out that they have a handle on what they're doing, and they're going to start paying off some of their debt, and they're going to start contributing some money to reserves, which to me translates to encouraging, because it means, okay, they're not going to come and try and take some, you know, VLF from us, or they're not going to impose some new, you know, requirements that the counties used to do, and now we're going to have to handle it and put it into our budget. So that's where I'm looking at encouraging with what we're getting out of the state.
And maybe they're not going to shut down another program like redevelopment?
Right. there's nothing left, really, so I guess maybe that's why.
Yeah. The meat really is off that bone. Let's go find another bird.
Right.
Okay. KINS, News and Information, Times 3:30. We'll be back with more from Regan Candelaria.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information, Times 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria from the sunny Fortuna.
Yep.
Annexation.
Is it still
kind of, is that going to be one of the challenges coming up for Fortuna, for the community? Is annexation going to be one of those?
You know, I don't know that it is in the very near term. We do have some projects on our list that our general plan suggests, but those are, you know, probably a little farther down the line. We just completed our annexation of the Riverwalk area last year in May. LAFCO gave us a designation of a new about 80-acre area right along Riverwalk Drive and the Eel River there. And actually, our first project is up and out of the ground, and they're set to open up shop right there. It's called Tractor Supply Warehouse.
On the 22nd, yeah.
Yeah, in February. They're going to open their doors, and that'll be a new retailer in the area, and we're all excited about that and looking forward to it. They really did a good job of putting a nice facility there, and there's room for 9 more on this particular subdivision.
Isn't it cool when somebody comes in and does it right? Instead of, you know, trying to cut the corners or not, do it right.
They really did. They cooperated and participated with us all the way. I've heard some good positive feedback from the development group, California Gold. They're happy with city staff and what went on out there. And you're right. They came in and they participated in our LID program. And so that means that they incorporated some water conservation measures into the parking lots and landscaping, which is a very nice feature and I think adds a lot of value to their property and their project. And it also looks nice. You know, the lighting and all the other improvements that they made in the area. You know, I think they'll benefit from, as well as the community.
Does this developer have other corporate connections?
Can
you leverage this into future deals?
Well, that's what we're working on now. We've got them coming in. Of course, we'll do some little grand opening type events and try and have some discussions with them. They're a developer out of another county up north, and one of their main clients is Tractor Supply. I think they're out of Nashville. And so, you know, this is probably one of their main clients, is they build these warehouses for them all over. You know, the West, I think, is what it is.
Do they like working with former mill sites?
This one actually wasn't, but you're suggesting on the other side of the freeway in Fortuna.
Quite possibly. There could be another location, yes.
Well, not for another Tractor Supply. Hopefully they're going to be drawn regionally for their store here. But yes, we want to develop relationships with other development groups or California Gold themselves.
Tough is that to do?
Well, you have to have property and project sites that are available, or have them assembled and have them ready to go, which in Fortuna we actually do. The one that you mentioned, our mill site is right there, vacant land basically. looking like some really good environmental reviews on that site, too, to give it approvals to actually do some projects, some commercial and industrial development. So that's excellent news. I know that the ownership of that particular property, again, that's not a city property, but they've been going through that process, and they expect to have a fairly clean bill of health in February. They've got a couple more tests to complete and then show those results and then have a good designation from the agencies.
With the 9 other lots on the back to the original side of the highway.
It's called, River Ranch Subdivision off Riverwalk Drive.
See, there must be a river there somewhere.
The Eel River. A little harder to see this month, but I'm sure it'll be visible again pretty
soon.
Wait
for high tide. It'll happen. Do you task somebody in the city to try to fill the other locations?
You know, we don't really have an economic development department or any type of real estate specialist or, those positions are, long gone for most cities with the cuts that we were talking about earlier. But as a staff, what we've done is assemble a team, basically a development team. I've got one person on staff that I kind of am putting towards, that facilitator role, that project manager role of, helping out a Tractor Supply, a California Gold, or other developers that are coming into town. We recently had AutoZone come in. We have another developer that's, I understand their group is developing 200 new stores in California, and one of which will be in Fortuna. They've been submitting plans for that.
200 stores in the state?
Yeah, it's some retailer
from... What a monster number.
Yeah, that's what I was like, wait, what? And they were like, this developer said, we've only got 2 or 3 of their projects, but there's another, 197 that they have on the books to be developed throughout California. And they're from the South. So there's some interest in those.
Waffle House?
No. That would be interesting and fun. My son would love that.
There's nothing like the concept of fried chicken on a waffle. It just makes me scratch my head and wonder, what have I missed?
I have been to a Waffle House. So we try to work as a team and offer, free services, pre-development workshops so that they can come in and submit their concepts and their conceptual designs. And we can go over, here's what you're going to have to do. Here are the things that we're going to be requiring. Here's the things that the state are going to be requiring to make sure that they can, have a smooth project when they formally submit. And hopefully get it through. I guess I will use Tractor Supply as an example. They came in, we barely had the city within our boundaries, after the annexation in May, and they're going to be open here in February, with a big warehouse. I think that's pretty good.
KINS, News and Information Times, 342. We'll be back with more from Regan Candelaria.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 345. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Regan Candelaria. Regan, some of the different challenges that are out there, whether it's trying to attract a new development or just trying to kind of keep abreast of things, how do you, with all the weirdness at the state, mm-hmm. with all the regulatory goofiness that comes from who knows where anymore, stay abreast of those things while still maintaining the focus on the things you have to maintain focus on?
Yeah, that is definitely one of the major challenges that we all face. And I guess I'm just going to go straight at the League of California Cities and give them credit, because they're our member organization that we rely upon to keep track of the last year. There was over 1,000, I think there might have even been 2,000 bills that were introduced. And they tracked them and they analyzed them and, they were able to toss out a bunch of them. But those that affected cities and that were, going to have potential impacts on us, whether it's Fortuna or Eureka or, San Francisco, they are there to look at those and give us some input and feedback. I'll just share with you, we get these things from the league. They're called action alerts. And I probably wouldn't have known about a particular bill that's even being proposed, but they'll let us know about it, and they'll say, hey, this one is significant enough, and it could affect your city, and here's our position on it, representing all of the cities, and we think you should bring this to your city council. And so you'll see those on our agenda once a month, maybe every 2 months. You'll see one or two that have come from the state saying, hey, if you don't get on board with this and get some input to your legislators, you know, this could have some adverse impacts on your community.
What is the relationship between the League of California Cities and the county CSAC organization? Do they work hand in hand? Are they mm-hmm. buddies? Are they in concert? Are they pitted against one another?
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm not sure how to answer that. I know that CSAC is a very similar organization that works on behalf of counties, and I would just venture a guess that we're kind of in the same boat on a lot of things dealing with the state and what they do, because really I would say that the county bears even the brunt of what comes down from the state. You know, they get a lot of it first, and then there's a lot of things that they do to affect cities as well. You know, and it's kind of a weird situation. There's so many more cities in the state for them to deal with than there are counties. But the counties have, you know, bigger responsibility and usually bigger budgets than the city. So, I don't know, maybe the state picks on us both equally. But again, I don't really know the direct relationship between the league and CSAC.
Intuition. For the entity leaders throughout the state, whether it's special districts or counties or cities, what is the level of dissatisfaction with the state? If you had a 10 scale, where do you think it would be?
I would probably have to say 4 or 5 right now. That's just my guess. The last few years have not been nice.
Well, philosophically, or is it just financially?
Financially, I mean, the city councils and other board members and board of supervisors, they need to make financial decisions with their budgets every year. And when you've got things like the loss of redevelopment, when you've got the changing of fees, you've got VLF changes, you've got the ERAF payments to the schools, and those things hit us very, very hard, you know, and it's very simple. You got the realignment. I mean, that's really a problem for counties and cities and our police departments that are now overtaxed. I mean, those are tough things that they come directly from, you know, Sacramento.
I'm smiling not only because you were able to tick off 10 things that quickly.
just right on the top of my head there.
I recognize them all as things from the last 3 or 4 years. I think the ERAF shift is probably the oldest one.
Yeah, that was.
But nonetheless, all within the last 7, 8 years, all these things have happened. Mm-hmm. And I don't sense that there's anything positive that the counties have gotten out of it or that the cities have gotten out of it. I mean, even if you get a little bit of autonomy, the hammer that comes along with that opportunity is so large that it's got to stamp out any benefit that might be perceived.
Yeah, I agree. It's a tough situation.
So why do you keep doing this?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Well, it's like you mentioned, what are the challenges? I actually kind of, I guess, like challenges. Like I said, they come over my desk every day, always something new. And I think that variety and that challenge in itself is something that motivates me. You know, I like to be busy. And it's a community service. I mean, everything that we do in local government, you know, we're working for the community. We're working for the residents. We're working for the businesses. We're working for the nonprofits and the service clubs and the church groups. They all rely on us as a city to provide certain services. And I think that's important. And you get some self-satisfaction out of that. And when you go to a meeting and then they're there.
Well, keep it up, man.
I'll try.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone. You'll see you tomorrow.